Today's story is about method acting, wizards, and dressing for the job you want. It's also about me, your host, Anupam Kher. But mostly, it's about making you smile. Welcome to Anupam Cares, Chapter 9, Magic Touch. Back in 1979, I was struggling. I was so thin that I could see through a keyhole with both my eyes. I was starting to lose my hair, and I wasn't getting enough work. But then I got some exciting news. Dolly Thakur, the actress, the casting director, the journalist called to tell me she was casting a new project. Not just any project. She was casting Richard Attenborough's film, Gandhi. At the time, everyone was buzzing about the film. The legendary Richard Attenborough was paying tribute to Gandhi's incredible life story. And the production was rumored to be exceptionally elaborate. It was going to be shot on location in India. But perhaps most exciting of all, the cast, with the exception of Candice Bergen, was to be Indian. And all the big names were auditioning. As you can imagine, I was over the moon when Dolly called and said, "Richard Attenborough is looking for actors. And I have suggested your name, Anupam." My heart skipped a beat. Being a little presumptuous and maybe a little optimistic, I said, "For Gandhiji's role?" She laughed. But I figured, why not? I was thin enough. And with enough time, I would be bald enough to play the great leader. She said,
No. He's already cast Ben Kingsley as Gandhi. But I think you will be an excellent Nehru."
All I heard was, "You will be Nehru." I couldn't help but break into a smile. For those of you who do not know the story behind the Indian independence movement, Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru was India's first prime minister. He was also Kashmiri, just like me. And when I heard her say, "You will be a good Nehru," I stopped thinking about auditioning. My mind fast-forwarded to the Academy Awards. In my head, cameras were flashing. People were cheering. And I...
Anupam Kher.
I was stepping on stage to accept my Oscar for Best Actor and a supporting role. But as Dolly continued to talk, I came back down to earth and I realized the role wasn't mine. Yet. I would have to wow Richard Attenborough in person. Back then, I was more into method acting. So to prepare for the role, I began with Nehru's look. At that time, I had a beard and a mustache, so I shaved those off. I started wearing a jacket in the Nehru style and even pinning a rose to the lapel in his trademark manner. And of course, I completed the vision with a crisp, white Gandhi topi. I also studied Nehru's walk. I perfected his loping stroll and the way he positioned his hands behind him when he moved. And I worked on his speech patterns, deconstructing his accent and listening for the little nuances in his voice. There's a famous speech Nehru gave after Gandhiji's assassination. It went something like this. "The light has gone out of our lives and there is darkness everywhere. I do not know what to tell you and how to say it. But our beloved leader Bapu, as we called him, the father of the nation, is no more." Oh my, it's a famous speech, but it's been years since I practiced that. As I continued to rehearse, my daydreams became more elaborate. I started to debate what exactly I would wear to the Academy Awards and who would be presenting my Oscar. Maybe De Niro would hand it to me. Or Brando. No. Meryl Streep. "Thank you, Meryl. This is an honor." "Yes. Oh, goodness. Oh, you're too kind. Yes, of course. I'm also a big fan of yours. Thank you, Meryl. I'll see you after the awards at the party." Life went on like that for a week or so. Then Dolly called me again. She said,
Richard Attenborough is staying at the Ashoka Hotel in Delhi and I have set up a meeting. Why don't you come and meet him?
This was it. All of my preparation was about to pay off. I called my best friend Vijay Sehgal and we took the bus over to the Ashoka Hotel. There's a saying, dress for the job you want. Well, when I stepped onto the bus, everyone was a little surprised to be sitting near the cook dressed up like Nehru. But that's the job I wanted. Little did I know, I would get that reaction a lot that day. When Vijay and I reached the hotel lobby, we were greeted by Dolly and an American gentleman, another casting director. They were a little confused by my costume too. They didn't say anything, but I could tell from the expressions on their faces. We stood there, staring at each other. Until Dolly broke the silence, she said, Richard Attenborough is on the fifth floor. Let's go and meet him. We started walking in that direction, but before I stepped on the elevator, Vijay pulled me aside, took me by the shoulders and said, Oye, Bittu, tera waqt aa gaya, dost. This is your moment, grab it, eh? Good luck, yaar. Oscar. I knew Vijay was right. This is what I had been practicing for. On the ride up, I started running through the Nehru speech in my mind. The light has gone out of our life. There is darkness everywhere. The light has gone out of our life. As I said the lines to myself over and over, I glanced at Dolly. Then I looked at the American who was staring very intently at the lift operator. The light has gone out of our life. There is darkness everywhere. The light has gone out of our lives and there is darkness everywhere. The elevator doors opened and Richard Attenborough was standing before me. But our introduction wasn't how I had pictured it. Richard had his hand on some man's shoulder and as the elevator doors dinged open, I heard him say, I am so happy to meet you, Roshan. I finally got my Nehru. I looked at Dolly, who was shocked. I tried to catch the American's eye, but he was still looking at the lift operator. As we walked into the suite, I tried to rationalize what was happening. I thought there must be some confusion. Maybe Richard Attenborough's tongue slipped. Maybe he accidentally said Nehru because he saw me dressed as Nehru. Then Richard turned to me and the casting director and spoke. This actor, for what role? But before anyone could answer, I said, I'm Nehru. I'm Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. He said, sorry, young chap, I've already finalized somebody else for that role. I said, who? He said, Roshan Seth. I said, how can you finalize somebody else for that role? Have you seen my audition? Have you seen me perform as Nehru? This is very unprofessional of you. You're a Britisher. You should not be talking like this. You must see me perform. You must see my screen test. You must see my long speech of Nehru that I have prepared for the last 1 month. Can you see? I look like him. I'm a Kashmiri. He said, okay, perform Nehru. In everyone's life, there are moments when you rise to a challenge and moments when you can't. The second he said, perform Nehru, I completely lost my confidence. I was thrown off by the circumstances. I had prepared that speech. I knew it backwards and forwards. Poor Vijay had watched me perform it a million times. Even he must have had it memorized. But my audition was a disaster. I couldn't speak more than one line. Sorry. There is darkness. After I fumbled through the first lines of Nehru's speech, I could feel the Academy Award slipping from my fingers. And I said,
okay, forget Nehru, give me another role.
Richard was silent. He avoided my gaze and looked up at the ceiling. Desperate, I said, please, give me another role. But give me a role of a person who participated in India's freedom struggle, please, Richard. Richard looked at his file and said, okay, do Abdul Ghaffar Khan. Abdul Ghaffar Khan was a Pashtun leader, a brave man known as Frontier Gandhi. For a minute, I was so happy. I said, thank you, Richard, thank you. And then the American casting director said, sorry, Richard, I have already got somebody else for that role.
Richard turned and asked him, "Really? Who?"
He said, "That elevator operator is taller and better fit for the role."
I felt like the wind was knocked out of me. A professional elevator operator had beat me for the role. Richard put his hand on my shoulder, the same gesture I saw him use when he cast the other man as Nehru. But this time he said,
"Sorry, young chap, I tried. The casting is done." I tried to maintain my composure. I said, it's okay. It happens. And I turned away, dressed as Nehru, but walking away as Anupam Kher, with slow, defeated strides. Many months later, once again, Dolly called up and said,
"You see, Anupam, we are doing the dubbing of Gandhi in Hindi. There's one line, you will get 3,000 rupees. Will you do it?"
I was so desperate. I was so down and out. I had spent so much time on the streets of Mumbai that I would do anything. And next morning at 8 o'clock, I was standing in the long queue outside BR Dubbing Theatre to do that one line. This is that one line.
Non-cooperation ka ek hi matlab, sarkar ko ukhaad phekna hai. Uska mahaz bagawat hi rasta hai.
In the end, I landed the second role Dolly offered me. I have one dubbed line in the Hindi version of Gandhi. It was not the award-winning role I was hoping for, but I was grateful for the work all the same. I got 3,000 rupees for that. An actor's life is filled with ups and downs. You build yourself for a role. You put all your passion and energy into landing it. There is disappointment when it doesn't come your way. But you have to keep believing in yourself and pushing forward. And while wearing the Nehru costume to the audition didn't work for me in that instance, let me tell you about someone who dressed for the job they wanted and actually landed it. And much, much more. For this section, let's take a trip to Christchurch, New Zealand. New Zealand is a beautiful country with a magical landscape. It has jagged mountains, deep blue waters. But what you may not know is that it's the world's only country with a government-appointed wizard. Yes, a wizard. The Wizard of New Zealand has been enchanting crowds in Christchurch for decades. He looks probably exactly how you imagine him. He has a long, wispy beard, a flowing robe, and an array of silly pointy hats. For more than 40 years, he has been setting up in Cathedral Square, and from the perch of his stepladder, he waves his hands and casts spells.
Abracadabra, focus, focus, kilikilik shoo, bibidi babidi boo.
It may surprise you to hear that the Wizard of New Zealand wasn't born with a magical gift. His name is Ian Brackenbury Channel. And for years, Ian served as a navigator in the Royal Air Force in Britain. In the 1960s, he moved to Australia and worked as a psychologist and teacher. And that's when things started to get a little wacky. As the Vietnam War loomed and protests escalated, Channel wanted to bring smiles to people. So he began dressing up as a wizard and wandering the streets, hoping that his spectacle would provide a little comic relief in an otherwise stressful time.
The wizard is unbelievable. And not many people understand, but he's... Yeah.
Oh, he's really good. I'm not lucky to see him move.
Focus, focus.
Oh, he's a guest.
What a joker.
His wizardry was going so well that in the early 1970s, Channel decided to expand his wizarding territory and move to New Zealand. At the time, people were banned from speaking publicly in Christchurch Cathedral
Square.
Channel decided Cathedral Square was exactly where he wanted to set up shop. But Channel decided, in his wizarding uniform, he began ranting and raving, casting spells in the center of Cathedral Square. The local government was horrified and tried everything to stop him. They even brought him to court. But when the courts banned him from the square, the public backlash was extreme. The people of Christchurch loved their wizard, and it wasn't long before the government buckled under the public pressure. But Channel didn't just cast spells. He also orchestrated little shenanigans to lift people's spirits. He started driving a Volkswagen Beetle around town that he called the Wizard Mobile. It was equipped with two front ends, so you could never tell if the wizard was coming or going. One day he built a giant nest on the 11th story of a nearby library and hatched from a giant egg to everyone's delight. He also began selling upside-down maps depicting New Zealand on the top of the world. On another occasion, he blessed a local rugby team from the air, chanting spells while skydiving. By 1990, the government of New Zealand had changed its tune and embraced Ian. The Prime Minister appointed Channel the official wizard of New Zealand, with the duty to amazing, amusing, and for a select few, annoying the people of the country. He even received a government stipend for his position. In 2009, he was awarded the Queen's Service Medal, one of the country's highest honors. And today, his official New Zealand passport just reads, "The Wizard." So he dressed the part and landed the role as an official wizard. And even though his story and mine had different outcomes, at the core, the message is the same. No matter how outrageous your dreams, you have to put on your armor and fight for them. It's like Henry Ford said, whether you think you can or you can't, you are right. That's it for today's episode. I'm Anupam Kher. Be kind to yourself. And thank you for listening. Anupam Kher is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Anupam Kher. Our executive producer is Mangesh Athikudur, senior producer Julian Weller, associate producer Morgan Lavoy, sound design and mixing by Julian Weller and Dan Bauza, music by Aaron Kaufman, production support from Emily Marinoff and Mary Dew, writing by Lucas Riley, Matt Riddle, Margun Lavoy, and Julian Weller. Lucas Riley and Matt Riddle are our story editors. Thanks to Sikin Paru, Herman D'Souza, Godwin Amana, CDM Studios, Connell Byrne, and Bob Pittman.
Do you think wizards are born?
I was a very unusual child, contrary to everyone knew me at the time. Rather like a wizard.